Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Every Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., streaming live at richarddugan.com. And you can also go to the radio show's page to listen to the podcasts. Also, a reminder that the interview that you might be listening to on the radio broadcast, I consider it short because usually we talk for much more than 50 minutes, which is quite a long time just to begin with. But nonetheless, sometimes if our guests are able to continue on for a little bit longer, we do just that. More information, more insight, more conversation, more inspiration, we hope, hoping to help you to make your dreams come true. New paradigms for a new world is our main slogan, and that's what we're looking for. And our guest today is looking to do that for you as well as with you, and for herself as well and with you. And she is the author of Be Your Cause, Discover How You Can Change the World. And my guest is Melissa Charity Waldron. Thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
Hey, my pleasure. My pleasure, Richard. It's great to be here.
This is something that when I was a kid growing up, and I used to hear that phrase, you know, change the world, you know, I used to hear that it was too big. You couldn't change the world because there was just too much. It was overwhelming. And so a lot of people, they would kind of sort of give up and say, you know, all right, fine, well, I'll do my thing. And really, that's what it's about mainly. But as I have grown and I have experienced the things I have, what I have come to realize is that it actually is, although you don't take it in one big bite, possible to change the world by virtue, of course, of changing oneself. And you talk about that a great deal, of course, throughout your book, which we are going to be talking about as far as the concepts and so forth today, of Be Your Cause. And I'm curious, there was something that I kind of want to start with because it's something that I keep getting reminded of every time, honestly, every time that there is a fire in the Santa Barbara area, which we had in the latter part of 2017, and that is the connection I have with my family, my parents, in particular, my mother, who I communicate with on a regular basis, or at least try to. At least I've been trying to let them know that, hey, we're okay, we're safe, everything's looking good and all of this. And, you know, we've only had to be evacuated once, and that was earlier this 2017 in the summer, after living here for 11 and a half years. And going through like 9 or 10 fires, and this was the first one that forced us to leave. And I think about, I know the day is coming. My folks are in their mid-80s. So I know that day or two is coming. You know, and for any of us who have parents, it's coming. And I'm curious as to not only, if I may, your experiences at the loss of your mother, but What did that do to you in the short term? Because it sounds to me like you had a pretty close relationship with your mom too.
Yeah, I did. You know, it's interesting. She's been gone now for 12 years, and she passed in 2005. Actually, on this day that we're speaking, ironically, and I have to say that she really helped. Her death actually helped to usher in a whole new era of my life in terms of not only the fact that she was gone, but that I had this opportunity to be by myself because my dad had passed a few years before that, and I'm an only child. And so not having family left, you know, I had this opportunity really to kind of face myself and to spend time, you know, really kind of delving into that. And, you know, my mom was a very spiritual person. She was actually a medium. And people would come to our house when I was a kid and, you know, bring jewelry with them from someone who had passed on and asked her to read it. And so I had people coming in. We had people coming in out of the house all the time. And my mom used to levitate the kitchen table.
Oh, wow.
She did. I saw it with my own eyes, and so did a lot of other people. You know, and so I kind of grew up, you know, we would have conversations as a kid with, my mom would be like, guess who I talked to today? And, you know, it would be a dead person. You know, she'd be like, I just talked to, you know, grandpa or who, you know, whoever it was. And we would have conversations like that. And I was very fluid as a child. I mean, I was very open, and I would see, you know, I saw ghosts all the time. I didn't know they were ghosts. I thought they were my imaginary playmates. So just to say that I had this background where I was already open to understanding that there was a lot more to this planet, this life, this, you know, the universe we're in, that than just the third dimension. You know, it's more than just the table and chairs and the clothes we're wearing. It's like there's so much more out there. But I had kind of gotten a little hardened. You know, I lived in New York City for a long time. I worked in politics. I was a producer of political news, and I'd always been a social justice person and a social activist. I worked for Greenpeace for a while. I'm a very environmentally conscious person, and just being in New York after a while, it kind of wears you down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like I was a little bit on the cynical side. And, you know, when my mom died, she passed away in Hartford. It was a very quick, she was diagnosed with this type of cancer that her doctor had literally given her 2 weeks to live. And I had never heard of that before. Who had ever heard of 2 weeks to live? But that's really true. And she really did. She was diagnosed on the 1st of December, and she passed on the 18th.
Mm.
And she said to me, in the hospital, that she just looked at me and she's like, just remember, Melissa, that there's so much more to this life than what you can see, you know, that you have to believe. You know, I want you to try to believe again that there's more to the world. And I said, okay. And I took myself to this, after she passed away, a couple months later, I took myself to this spa way out in Santa Fe in New Mexico. And I looked at the stars and was hanging out in this hot tub. it was really great. It was like a crystal clear night. It was February. It was right around my birthday.
Mm.
And I could hear her, and she was talking to me, and she was saying, you know, okay, it's time to kind of wake up, you know, wake up. And that was sort of the beginning of it. You know, I had to start searching for why I felt so unhappy all the time, why I had so much anxiety, why I had so much fear, why I was, you know, I had a lot of anger to sort through, and I committed to myself right then and there. I was like, I'm on the journey. I'm gonna figure out how to feel better, you know, and feel better about myself and my life and the planet. And that was what started in 2005. And so this book is sort of a declaration of that, is a understanding of what I've come to in this life and how I feel about the planet. And I feel like there's so much opportunity here and there's so much good happening that I don't want us to get, you know, all stressed out by what's happening in the political climate right now in America, because there's so much ahead of us that's really positive. And that's what I really want to communicate to people.
Well, as far as that's concerned, I look at it from the perspective that in the grand scheme of things, and I'm talking of the universe, the infinite universe, it means nothing, because in 100 or 1,000 or 10,000 or maybe even in a year, nobody's going to care. And the rest of the universe doesn't care. It goes on regardless of what little petty things we manage to get ourselves involved in mentally and emotionally, as well as physically on this planet, that it really doesn't matter from that standpoint. And that's kind of how I've been able to better grapple with it. It's the same thing even with the fires that, you know, okay, we get moved around in the real time in this present day, in this present moment, but you know what? When I'm gone, what difference did it make when because of that happened? You know, unless, of course, we take a look at the lessons that we learned in those processes, that hopefully, and this kind of goes to the next question I have for you, hopefully help us to wake up. And I'm curious, when you heard that phrase from your mother for the first time, did you fully understand what that meant, what she was saying to you? What do you mean, wake up? I am awake. I'm hearing you kind of thing. Did you understand?
Well, not exactly. I mean, it was more like I said to myself that night that I would give up the lies and the deceit I've been telling myself, and I would search for a greater truth of existence, just in terms of being alive and having a more fuller, richer life, and what does that entail, and how do I get past myself? Like, you know, the emotions that get you stuck, you know, the fear, the anger, the doubt, the worry, all this stuff. You know, and I think that, to me, that's what waking up is about. But I didn't know that at the time, no.
And so that particular journey began at that given moment, if you will, in hearing that, because was that now your time to say, okay, well, what does that mean? Do I need to figure that out? Were you curious at that point to try to figure out, okay, what is she trying to tell me? Or was it something that you didn't think about until another catalytic event happened?
No, that was the catalytic event.
That was it.
You know, yeah. You know, there's always someone, a friend of mine said to me, you know, there's life before when your mom's alive, and then there's life after your mom dies, right? And because our mothers are so important. Not to say that the father's not, but for me, I had a very deep connection to my mother. And, you know, we've been in many lifetimes together. And I think the last time I was her teacher, and because she told me before she died, she was like, okay, it's interesting how our roles reversed again and how now you're the teacher again. And I said, yeah, I guess this is how it's supposed to be. I don't know. But anyway, but I feel like for me, it was a moment of clarity. And I had had a lot of, I was really had a lot of consternation about a few things in my life. And I came home from Santa Fe at that time, and I called my realtor, and I put the condo on the market. My mom had this condo that she passed on to me, and I decided to sell it, and I decided to have a hysterectomy because I'd been holding on to my uterus, even though I'd had so many doctors tell me to have a hysterectomy, and I had so many problems. I wanted to have children, but I just was like, okay, this isn't meant to be. And I thought, okay, let's just move on, you know, let's just move on. And I did that. And I had the surgery and I sold the house. It all happened at the same time. It was a little crazy. I wouldn't advise that for anybody. But, and then I moved on and that was it. It was sort of a cataclysmic, you know, domino effect, her death. And it led me into working with a really great therapist who was based in Tibetan Buddhism and I want to say shamanic principles of some kind. It was very healing, and it just led me onto this whole healing journey of discovering cranial sacral therapy and body talk therapy, and what is, you know, not really realizing how much anxiety I was carrying in my body, you know, and things like that, and like healing and finding, you know, vitamins and turning to naturopaths and getting acupuncture, and all this stuff just started coming up. I had never experienced it before, you know, and so it's not just about, you know, the awakening process is like also a very much a body process and paying attention to how your body feels and you know, and not only just your mind, but everything. And so it's everything. It takes up everything, and it's just been a great change, totally.
Now, when you began this this particular journey, especially down the road where we are today, you and I talking about your book, Be Your Cause, obviously this is an outgrowth. This is, shall we say, a manifestation of all of the thoughts and so forth that have come since then. There are so many, especially with technology today, which you and I have had to deal with in a very interesting way prior to this interview starting, there's so many different ways of getting the word out, expressing those thoughts and ideas. Why a book?
As opposed to, you mean, having a podcast or doing something on video or
exactly,
like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think one begets the next. I you know, I'm a writer by nature, and writing is my medium. It's what I feel most comfortable doing. And then I also started making videos on YouTube about this book, which I'm just, you know, putting out there into the world right now. So it's sort of, you know, I think it depends on what medium, you know, and this is kind of what I help people figure out. The women that work with me, I do coaching for women who are experiencing need for transformation, and usually that manifests into a new entrepreneur situation where they want to start a new business. And but they, you know, people are trying to search for how to express themselves, you know, and it's like, how can you be your own performance art? You know, that's what I always think about, because it's like, we're sort of on stage, you know, and we have a chance to, you know, perform and just be, have fun and just express ourselves creatively. That's really what we're here to do on this planet, is be creative and express. And so for me, my expression is through writing, mm-hmm. and mainly. And that's why that started that way.
Well, I know that for myself, in the process of writing my own book, that it's a challenge, to say the very least, no matter what you're writing about. And, you know, and I mean, I struggled just to get the thing going, to the point where, you know, it's starting to drive me crazy. 16, 17 years, how much longer is this going to take? I'm not writing War and Peace. It may be 100 pages at the most, if that,
uh-huh.
You know, and yet I had a lot of struggles with that. I had a lot of difficulty with that. It's still in process, but at least the book itself, I'm now ready to begin the process of taking it to someone to have them look it over, like an editor or a proofer or something of this nature. And go from there. So when you started to write, because it's what you do, as you say, did you have any trepidation, or did it just come naturally? That's, as you say, you know, you write, that's what you do. So did this just come naturally for you?
You know, I think, yes, it did. And for me, what's important is to have the right environment for whatever it is that you want to do, however you want to express yourself. And so what that means for me is having a very quiet space that's beautiful, because I think beauty is the highest manifestation of life. You know, it's like we want, I choose to be surrounded by beauty whenever possible. And so I went to my friend's house in down in Washington, D.C. They have a beautiful home in Bethesda. I had access to her office. Nobody knew where I was. I just left Connecticut. I live in Connecticut. I disappeared for a couple weeks, and that's what it took, you know. And I just that's all I did, was I just focused on my book for like 2 to 3 weeks. And it's not a very long book. It's 49 pages, but it was something that was really wanting to come out. You know, you feel that, you know. And I think maybe, you know, like something for you is, you know, I feel like you have the gift of voice and you know, you're a wonderful, articulate speaker. And I'm wondering if, like, if you instead were just talking into a recorder and then just had that transcribed, you know, like maybe that might be an easier process for you. I think it's all about, like, just trying to find the creative process.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, for me, I have to go for a walk, and I need to do yoga, and I do dancing, and, you know, I get very physical. I pop up from my chair every hour and, you know, literally turn on some whatever music makes me feel good, and I bop around, and then I go back to my writing again.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we all have our process.
Yeah, and I've thought about that, too, and I know that there are all kinds of transcription services and so forth. Matter of fact, my first wife took courses in transcription and worked for the VA in Phoenix to transcribe medical records. You would not believe the words I had to pronounce for her in going through the process. So I'm quite familiar with that aspect of it. And I have to say, too, that I'm thrilled at what you have brought forth for us. The title, I really like it, Be Your Cause. because it's akin to what I'm putting together and finishing up in my work as well. I think it's one of the challenges that we have when we want to do something, when we want to be something, if you will. But I'm wondering if maybe the first step is trying to figure out, and here's, to me, I guess the biggest challenge for most all of us. I guess, I don't know, maybe I was born under a lucky star. I've lived right. I eat the right things or whatever. Or I usually say that I just find myself to be in the right place at the right time. So I'm doing this, and I've been doing this for a long, long time. But a lot of folks haven't been. They have been struggling to try to find, as the phrase goes, their purpose. So that isn't that maybe the first step along this way? How do I find my cause?
Well, you know, I started that. I had that exact same issue. And I was wondering, you know, is this supposed to be my cause? And I was working as a television producer. And the last job I was offered was for a reality show. And they wanted me to be a producer where I would show up at people's homes where their child had just been murdered. And they wanted me to go in and interview family members and get them to cry on camera and invade their lives. And I, you know, and they offered me a lot of money, but I was like, no, I turned it down. And that was in 2012. And I thought, I just can't do this. I just don't want to do this television stuff anymore. And I was like, well, what do I do? You know, because I always thought my purpose was producing, you know, and I was always there to support other people. And, you know, I've worked with celebrities, and I'm always the one in the background. And then I was like, wow, maybe I'm meant to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, to get back to your question, is if you're not feeling, it all goes back to feeling good, right?
Mm-hmm.
And because if you're not really feeling good, if you're suffering from, which, and I have to say, I've had my challenge in this life is chronic depression. You know, I mean, severe depression. And I didn't feel good. You know, I didn't, the whole time I lived in New York City, I was kind of walking around in a fog and, you know, and not every day, but I mean, you know, off and on. And it was challenging. And, you know, I think if you're not feeling good, it's hard to kind of find your quote unquote purpose because you don't know what feels good. You don't know you're up from your down.
Yeah.
So for me, what was important is I had to get healthy and I had to get active and I had to start just being creative, you know, and journaling in the morning. And for me, I had to connect my hand and get a pen and get on paper and connect all those dots. And that was what made me feel good. And that helped me find more energy, more power from within, because you can't help other people. It's like they say when the plane's going down and the oxygen masks come out, you know,
mm-hmm.
you're supposed to take the first breath and
right.
then you help the person next to you. And that's really how it's supposed to be. We're supposed to help ourselves first. And I think we want to call ourselves as selfish, you know, that being selfish is bad.
Yeah.
But actually being selfish is the best thing you can do for yourself. It took me a long time to figure that out because I was an appeaser and I was an enabler. And, you know, I would want to help anybody but myself. You know, I just didn't want to even look at myself. I didn't want to think about myself. You know, I just wanted to, it was too painful. The emotions hurt too much. It was too uncomfortable. And I just wanted to ignore myself. And that just led to all kinds of physical ailments and all kinds of relationship problems in my life and business problems, money problems, everything, you know? So I think your purpose is really if you're in your purpose, it's when you're really feeling good and you're helping other people. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah. And I would agree with you there that being of service is another way of phrasing it as well.
Yeah.
To others.
Yes.
But you can't, as you've rightly said it, and of course this is the statement that's often made when it comes to, for example, survival. the first rule of survival training, and not that I've been through it, but I've been told, the first rule is take care of number one. Because if you don't take care of number one, you can't take care of two, three, four, and five.
Exactly.
You know, and that's not being selfish. That's being practical, you know?
Exactly. That's just surviving.
Yeah.
You know, that's just what we have to do for ourselves.
Exactly. I mean, I have this beautiful white female shepherd. She's 14, I believe, and she's struggling through all of the challenges of old age, and I have to help her up and down the steps and the ramp out into the backyard so she can take care of business and what have you, or even just be out there with us as we play with the other dog. And it's a challenge because, you know, she's never, ever messed in the house before until now, but it's because of the challenges she's facing. So now I am having to take care of her. And I'm giving her all of the love and the support and all of the special things that I possibly can. And if I hurt myself in the process, then I can't help her. And that is a very frustrating feeling for me to have done that. I mean, I've been ailing with a sore or I don't even know what the heck it is. I've got it in a brace right now because it's a little sore and tender, and it hurts a little bit to move it around. So I'm left-handed now. My right hand is what's hurting, my right wrist. So my left hand, I've got to help her up. I've got to scoop underneath her to lift her hind end up to carry her out. And, hey, I mean, that's just what I have to do. And I'm willing to do it because she's given so much. She's raised three or four other dogs in her lifetime. She's been a caregiver. And so, you know, and now it's my turn to care for her. And,
yeah.
And my wife keeps saying, you know, that, you know, she knows that she doesn't have much longer. We don't know how long it is. Could be a week, could be 6 months, could be another year or two. And I hope. But at the same time, she's also very much aware, my wife is, she doesn't want to leave yet. And so that's an interesting challenge. Anyway, that's sidebar there, but
yeah,
the process, this whole process of, maybe it's not so sidebar because one of the other things I want to talk about is this aspect of, and this goes along with this, I think, of what does it look like for those who aren't familiar with it to get out of one's way?
Well, you know, someone said that to me a long time ago, that, you know, it's important to get out of your own way. And I had to think about, I was like, what does that mean? Like, I just didn't get it, you know? And I was like, get out of your own way. Like, what, you know, I was like, I don't know yet. But it took me a long time to figure that out. And, you know, I think it's because we put up so many roadblocks, you know, for ourselves, like, yeah. No, we can't do that. I mean, you know, for whatever story we tell ourselves, like, you know, I've never been good at tennis. Why would I be good at it now? You know, stopping ourselves from wanting to do things that we instinctively feel. When I say getting out of our own way, I really mean where most of us walk around the planet and we do not pay any attention to our intuition. You know, their intuition is talking to us all the time. You know, it's our higher selves are trying, like, knock, 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 you know, hello. And we don't do it. You know, we don't listen. We think we can't do it. And then we have all this stuff telling us why we can't do it and all these reasons, you know, and all this, you know, proof. We have evidence, you know, like we sucked at math as a kid, so therefore we're going to suck at math now and we can't do our finances properly or whatever that is,
yeah.
You know. And that to me was... that to me is what getting out of your own way is about. It's like stopping, not listening, not heeding the caution of your negative, you know, head talk.
Yeah, but you can't put earplugs in and block it out. So, what is your process for blocking those, or at least either quieting them or increasing the volume of the good stuff that will help to spur you on?
Yeah. Well, I never, you know, I tried meditating so many times in my life, and you know, you always hear people say that, try meditating, and you're like, yeah, right, whatever. You know, and you sit still for a few minutes, and you're like, I got nothing. You know, or, you know, you're like, this isn't working, you know, and it's hard to sit still for more than 5 minutes at a time. For me, I have a real hard time with it. And and finally, I'm not sure what happened, but around this time last year, I was like, I'm going to do this. And I just started meditating every day for 20 minutes before I even got out of my bedroom or went to the bathroom, did anything. I just meditated. And it's been a life changer. And then I write, I journal in the morning now. And that's been a life changer. And I express gratitude before I even get out of bed. I think of three things that I'm grateful for, whatever they are. And I really feel, I don't just say it, I feel it. I let myself feel how incredibly grateful I am for whatever that is. And it's the feeling of it.
Yeah.
And it really makes a big difference. And you start your day differently. And when you start your day differently, new things happen. Different things happen to you that probably wouldn't happen. You know, like I didn't go through that process a couple days ago because I just didn't feel like it, right? Because I was feeling, you know, a little bit depressed. And so I didn't do that. I didn't meditate. I didn't write. And my day was sort of crappy. You know, like the whole day, I just sort of like, ugh. And I was like, I don't like that. And I don't, you know, the contrast is right. Like we're there, like life is about contrast and you see the contrast and you're like, okay, I don't really like that. You know, what can I do to make that better? And so I got back on track the next day and
yeah,
it really makes a difference.
Yeah. I my cycle that has been in existence for the last few years has been in the mornings. When my alarm goes off, do I wait for 15 minutes before I get up? And I still have plenty of time if I do. So I kind of give myself that. Then I get up and I begin the process of caring for the animals around the house, feeding the dogs, feeding the cats, cleaning the boxes. And of course now caring for my dog Makushla, and then letting the chickens out of the coop so that we actually lock them in the coop at night to protect them from predators because of experiences that we've had over the years, and that's sort of my process. And I feel on the weekends especially like if I don't do that, if I don't stay in that, I actually feel guilty because they need to be taken care of. I mean, the chickens can't stay in there all day. They've got to be let out of the coop, you know, and the dogs and the cats have to be fed and the boxes have to be cleaned and so forth. But that's sort of my routine. And I'm going to have to say that that's sort of a meditative process of sorts. When I'm feeling good, when my body isn't sore in any of its extremities, it usually goes by pretty quick and I feel pretty good about it. And I'm glad to be able to make sure that they're all cared for. But I also think too, I'm wondering too about this process of caring for the people around us, not necessarily as caregivers in some kind of a professional sense, you know, or working like in a hospice or something of that nature, but actually thinking about the people that are in our lives. You talked about being grateful. One of the aspects of starting your day. And regardless of the type of relationship that you have with that person, because it may not be the greatest, there is, I've actually had to look at this, there is a certain element of, or you have to learn how to be grateful even for those people who are of a consternation to you in your life, don't you?
Yes, you do.
You know, I mean, they're teaching us lessons as well.
Well, they're teachers in our lives, right?
We can't.
We don't like something that they do or say. It is rubbing us the wrong way. It's probably something within ourselves that, you know, we still are struggling with. And is how do we come to terms with, how do we come to peace with that? You know, and
yeah.
Wish that person well and really mean it and say thank you so much and move on.
Yeah. And if you were to literally say that to them, thank you so much for being in my life. No, they knowing that they're being a pain in your butt, that's going to probably drive them crazy. But it also has shown me too. There are a couple of I don't know if they're old wives' tales, but they're things that we heard as kids. Two in particular. One is that sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me. I found out that's not true. That words can do a hell of a lot of damage.
Indeed.
But then the second one I found real interesting, and that is that you can't change other people. I found out that's a lie. Because if I change myself, and obviously it has to begin with self. We go right back to that same thing we were talking about earlier. You got to take care of you, right? If you change you, then the people around you are going to have one of two basic reactions. They're going to want to get even closer to you because they like the change. They like the new you and what have you. Or they're going to want to get as far away from you as possible because they want nothing to do with the changes that are taking place in you. And I guess that kind of goes into the law of attraction of sorts, or the law of attraction or repulsion, I guess, would be the reverse of that, right?
Yes. 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 I think it's, for me, it's a, if I want to be, I want to be better. I want to be, I don't want to be, confronted by the same issue again and again. So it's like, how can I change this? And then, you know, I start to change myself. And quite frankly, that's why my marriage fell apart, is because I started to change.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it wasn't working anymore. And that's nobody's really no fault necessarily, but I think
this is what happened.
We move on.
Yeah.
I mean, that happens a lot with people, like friends fall away, right? Friends come into your life for a moment or two and then they disappear, or, people, they're attracted, you're attracted to people based on your frequency, your vibrational level, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and then if it's not working, then it's like having that electric frequency, that dog whistle, that like either it pulls them towards you or pushes them away.
Exactly.
So, yeah. I had a lot of clearings in my life like that, where people I had really close to me all of a sudden just disappeared for various reasons. And it just kind of, nature abhors a vacuum. So anytime that happens, you just have to know that the next thing is going to come, the next wave. It's an ebb and flow, and people will come and they'll go, and it's all good.
Exactly.
We're
talking with Melissa Charity Waldron, and she's the author of Be Your Cause, Discover How You Can Change the World. And we're going to talk more about that as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Please stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. And I am joined by Melissa Charity Waldron, the author of Be Your Cause. And how long did it take for you to discover your cause?
Well, I think that process hasn't necessarily come to an end. I think we don't know. For me, I'm all about what is the potential of my life. What kind of impact can I have? How can I have a positive impact? And I think, again, it starts with yourself. And so for me, it's just a constant daily, wake-up call of, how am I feeling? How am I doing? what could I do better? And I like to start the day when I meditate now. I like to ask myself, how can I grow? Excuse me. How can I grow? What can I give? And what can I celebrate? And those are really important questions, and I put them out there, and I ask for guidance, and and I kind of just go with what my intuition tells me now. A lot of times I have things planned out where I think I'm supposed to do X, Y, or Z, and then a lot of times I'll be like, no, I'm supposed to go do this, you know? And I think it's just showing up, you know? I think Woody Allen said that once, right? It's like life is, you know, 80% or 90% of life is just showing up, and it's so true. You know, we can talk ourselves out of doing stuff all day long, but if you show up at the gym, right, you know you're going to feel better or different when you walk out. You know, you're going to feel energized. You know, if you eat better, you know you're going to do things. But sometimes it's, I think it's all about habit, you know, really when it comes down to having that ritual, you know, having a routine and having a ritual where you're nourishing yourself, either taking yourself to the gym or having lunch with your friend or, you know, to where you're again, going back to that feeling better. Because I strive to feel exhilarated. You know, what's better than feeling exhilarated? Because then when you're feeling like that, the people that you're around feel that effect. And then that helps move things forward. And I don't know. I mean, I used to approach it from a totally different perspective, Richard. And I was, you know, when I started my coaching business, I wanted to work with social entrepreneurs because I think, and I still do, but they, you know, because those are people who are really having an impact on the planet, in my opinion, right? They're into sustainability, they're into energy conservation, they're into community development and cooperation, all the things that we need to focus on in business. But I started to realize that there's a lot of us out there that really want to do that kind of work, but we're so stymied with our own hang-ups that we can't really fully be present in our own lives, not, you know, much less be fully present in a business that has so much, you know, you have to have that kind of energy, that kind of momentum to go into that kind of business. You have to really feel it in yourself first, and that's where I come into play with people I work with, is to really help build that passion and build that purpose and build that foundation for their business at the same time.
I know there are a lot of folks who have done it on their own. I mean, they've been self-motivators. They just are driven.
Absolutely.
And that's great, all right? But for myself, as much as I am also somewhat self-driven, if there's a project that I want to do, you know, I'll do it and I'll put it out there and away we go. But I have to tell you that the process of getting started with a variety of different things, I have always enjoyed that connected, collaborative endeavor, if you will. And you know, and certainly giving credit where credit is due. I mean, quite honestly, even if I didn't, you know, go through that process, the reality is I'm not where I am because I did it all on my own. I am beholden to so many people.
Absolutely.
I didn't get here in some kind of a vacuum. And you know, and I acknowledge that and I'm grateful. I've had a lot of fun collaborating with people. And maybe that's the reason why. For example, maybe 10 or 12 or 14 years ago, I might have finished my book then if I could have found someone to collaborate with and say, look, I need you to assist me, to prod me, to continue to push me forward so I can get this work finished and I can move on to something else, you know, because it's really sounding stupid when I tell people, oh, I'm still working on the book 25 years later. Really? You know, and so I'm wondering about that aspect of folks needing to have maybe a mentor or someone in this process of moving forward, but also adding to that, let's add another dimension to it that you talk about, and that's a spirit conscious entrepreneur, ones that have a soul calling to change the world for the better by helping others. And we talked about that, of course, earlier, but in terms of not just acknowledging that they're not going to get there on their own, but also acknowledging that I need, I don't know if I want to go quite so far, say I need someone to hold my hand kind of thing. not quite to that degree, because other people have their own causes as well, right? So for example, if I was to say, well, Melissa, I really want to finish my book, but I need help, you know? What are your suggestions for someone who is, you know, they really know what it is they want to do, but they would really like to have the support and encouragement and so forth of others?
Absolutely. We all need that. And, even the self-directed ones, self-motivated ones, or, they all had mentors. Mm-hmm. I don't know anybody, I don't know, there is no millionaire or billionaire out there who made it on their own. That's just not true.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has a support network. And it's so important that, especially as solopreneurs who, those are mainly my clientele, those people I work with a lot, are on their own. They're isolated. I spend a great deal of my time by myself. And you have to have support, we all need connection, right? And so, I say, to really get yourself going, if you find yourself stuck, then it's really up to you, right, to change that and
sure.
to find the person that you need who will help you. And, a lot of us get stuck on the money thing because they don't think they have the money for a coach or a mentor. And, it's a chicken and the egg thing, but you have to kind of get over that feeling of scarcity and feel like I can live an abundant life. I deserve to have this mentor. I deserve to have this person, this editor. Maybe you need an editor to work with you. And, and that's it. And you decide that you're going to do this. You're going to finish your book. And when you make that decision, the universe conspires, right, with you. And things start happening and doors start opening. And you might walk into a coffee shop and stand next to someone who you start conversating with. And, and this person happens to be an editor, And mm-hmm. you're like, oh, well, I have this book. You know what I mean? Like, once you make a decision and you commit to it and that is your focus, then mm-hmm. you can't go wrong.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly important to remember that because, as I've used this analogy, I don't know, countless numbers of times on this program, that if it were, if the design for humanity was that each of us was to live individual, solitary, isolated lives, there are certainly enough planets in the universe that each one of us, even though there are 7.5 to 8 billion of us, each one of us would have our own planet. However, the reality is we're all here together.
Mm.
Okay? And to me, it doesn't take a big leap of faith or a great deal of logic, or as the old phrase, doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that if we're all here together, doesn't that say that we should all be working and playing together and collaborating?
Mm. Absolutely. I think that's one of the reasons why I feel positive about the way things are going on the planet now, because we are starting to recognize the other.
Mm-hmm.
We are starting to recognize that we're all connected. And the way that, that's going with the immigration problems, that's happening in the White House, the ban and all that nonsense. The people are coming together, so the muckety mucks at the top, they're trying to make these laws to keep us separate.
Yeah.
But it's not working.
We're
coming together faster.
Well, down through my career in the last 40 years, almost 40 years, I've noticed as time has gone on, there have been those events that, whether they were designed, they were natural or otherwise, to divide us as a people. And
yeah.
I remember when I first got into broadcasting and I was working for a religious station, and this was in 1979, 1980, 81, and right at the time of the beginning of the AIDS crisis. And the first thing that came to my mind was, this is because of the attitudes I was hearing, this is something that's here to divide us. This has nothing to do with any kind of a disease. This is something that's to try to separate. And you know the old phrase, a house divided against itself cannot, will not stand. And one thing and another would come along, and again, another way of dividing us. And then another thing, and another thing, and another, and then we get into the 21st century, you'd think we would have grown up. Forget that. Another thing comes up. 9/11 comes up, and we're divided once again. Maybe initially we were united, but then people started asking questions. Then as we go through the first decade, again, different things happen. And it just continues on and on. And it almost seems as though the powers that be today have sort of discovered that as long as we keep them divided, we'll keep being able to do whatever it is that we want. And it doesn't matter what institution you label, whether it's the religious, educational, political, or otherwise, as long as they keep us divided and separated and helping us to forget that we are connected, then things don't change. And it seems to me like a lot of what you're talking about here, and this is one of the things I'd like to talk about too, because I don't see this as a divisive concept here. I remember Tim Allen, the comedian Tim Allen, when he first started coming out with a stand-up and talking about, you know, men are pigs and guys being with guys and so forth. And he got a lot of flack for that because he thought he was being anti-woman. When in reality, I saw an interview with him. He said, I wasn't being anti-woman. It's just that guys, from time to time, need to be with guys, just like gals and women need to be with women. And so I want to talk about this aspect, but from the perspective of the divine feminine wisdom. Now, I've often said, because I've only lived under, politically speaking, as well as in business and so forth, I've only lived under patriarchs. I believe that's the male version. Whereas when I was a kid and I was growing up in my family, I had four sisters and a mother. My brother and I and my dad were outnumbered. So I would have to say we were living more under a matriarch system. I think I'd rather prefer the latter to the former because of the way things have gotten so messed up. But let's talk about this aspect of divine feminine wisdom in the context of being your cause.
It sounds, you know, maybe to some people it's like, that sounds like a really lofty term. But to me, it's about raising the universal frequency of the planet. You know, it's getting back in touch with the goddess consciousness, you know, that helps us let go of the ego. It helps us let go of judgment. It brings in a sense of safety and place and cooperation and collaboration between people. That, you know, where the fear is diminished and the love is supported. And I think this is a time when, you know, we really need the divine masculine as well. We need the leadership. We need the kings, you know, the kings among men. This is a time that we need them to really stand up and show, I think, other men the way. I mean, we're at a crisis point with, you know, the sexual harassment issues that are happening around in every industry, it seems like right now, you know, men are leaving. My former boss from my own public radio days was escorted out of the building a few weeks ago. It's very troubling, you know. But yet at the same time, I think that men, I have such compassion for men because it's hard to carry all that weight and feel, I don't know what it's like, but it must feel very alone and scary and not like you can let your defenses down and really show people how you are because it's a, you know, you might be taken down. You know, I think it's like this old primitive feeling that, you know, they must protect. But it goes back to really opening up your heart and connecting with your emotions. You know, I have a few friends of mine that are men and they're in their 50s and I've, you know, recently they've had heart attacks And, you know, I feel like there's just a time now where we really have to get really, really crystal clear about how we're really feeling. And that's the first step to, you know, what I call divine feminine wisdom, is really getting in, you know, getting in touch with our emotions. You know, like, that's been, you know, I mean, I'm laughing because it's like, that's, you know, it's sort of a cliche, you know, from like the 60s and 70s. And, but it's really true.
Yeah.
You know, we really need to connect with how we're really feeling.
Yeah.
And because otherwise resentment builds up. I mean, I watched it in my own father. My father was a stellar example of a man who is completely emotionally shut down and who, you know, was very unhappy. He was very depressed when he was 90 when he died, but he was depressed. Mm. And I think it was that all that weight was put on him that he couldn't flourish. He just felt obligated, or he felt like that was his role, you know, and the armor goes up. It's that game face that I see men wear in the, you know, in the workplace. And you know, it's like this warrior, you know? And so I want to see the love warrior come out. You know, I want to see men who fight for love and openness and, you know, there's so many wonderful men in my life I see, and I love the reflection of that, that it's just, that, you know, there's just, I feel like there's more compassion, there's more open-heartedness with a lot of men that I'm encountering and experiencing, you know, like yourself, Richard. I mean, it's like, you know, I think there's just more possibility for men to really be open, and we just have to kind of get past this point and move on to something more interesting other than accusing them of being, you know, sexual harassers, which is, of course, horrible. But it's like, how can we move past that and get to a better place?
Well, there's a lot of things here. First of all, this has been going on for decades. This is not something new that just suddenly started happening. And to me, it dovetails off of the even the Catholic Church scandal, the priests abusing both boys and girls, for that matter. But then there's another aspect of it, too, that I find interesting. And again, I realize that there's a line that's been crossed, but we were designed to be attracted to and by the opposite sex for the most part, right? I mean, that's just basic biology in one sense. But then there's another element too, and I feel the same way. When I was dating, I would come across so many damaged women, and I thought, who screwed you up? Who messed you up? Was it your brother, your father? So, you know, I got to deal with the cleanup. And I really kind of got, I was resentful, not of her, the particular woman I was with, but of the people in her past. And then I began to be, especially if it was a male, I would feel ashamed to be a male. Because is this the way we're going? I've got four sisters. I would never treat my sisters like that. And then there's one other dynamic, too, that I find interesting that is completely lost. And this is not taking away anything from any of the women. And I've heard, too, that there have been men who have been harassed as well. Not taking anything away from their legitimate claims. These individuals who have been accused, they've been tried and convicted. But I thought in this country you were innocent until proven guilty. And just because an allegation has been made, does that mean that you're automatically guilty? You know, I mean, that's one of the things that has struck me in particular. It's like, wow, we are so quick on this subject to castigate and to expel. You talked about your boss at NPR being escorted from the building for the accusations. Now, some of these guys, like Al Franken, for example, Senator Al Franken, he admitted, yep, I may have perceived it differently, but yeah, I did that. And there have been some others as well who have acknowledged, you know, doesn't represent who I am today, but back then, yeah, I that was totally inappropriate. And I'm wondering, first of all, how certainly the women, obviously, they've got probably therapy they're going to have to go through for years. And what about the guys? In this case, since we're dealing with the male and the female here, yeah, what about these guys who now we're going to have to deal with this? Now this has come up again. I mean, they didn't think anything of it at the time because it's just the way things were. Mm-hmm. Well, now, so to speak, the chickens have come to roost, and So now how do the guys get past this? And then how does our society get past this so that we can start to work together? Because I got to tell you, you wonder what's going to come up from your past. You know, did I make a pass at a woman 20 years ago, and could she come and accuse me of sexual harassment? I mean, she said no, and I stopped, you know, but still made a pass, that kind of thing. I mean, you know, how far is this going to go, and how much longer before, again, we grow up?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's important for you to bring up. It's so ingrained in our culture. I honestly think a lot of men weren't even consciously aware of it. You know, and I know that, and I'm not trying to make an excuse for men or be an apologist for men. I've had my own issues with it, and, you know, being in the media,
mm-hmm.
As a woman in the 90s, you know, my first job interview, when I wanted to work on a documentary project, and this guy who was in charge, the executive producer, he asked me, he's like, why do you want to work on this project? He's like, you know, you're so attractive. Why don't you, you could just get married. You know, you don't need this job.
Mm.
And and it's like, it kind of started that way. Like, and I had men in film and television. I've had men throw things at my head. I've had them Whoa. Curse me. I've had them physically push me sometimes when they got really mad. I corrected a guy for a spelling error he had in a letter he was writing to President Clinton at the time. I've experienced that. And I haven't had anyone masturbate in front of me. But you know, I think, and as women, I was trying to remember, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine yesterday, because I was trying to remember how I felt about all that back then. And, you know, what that was like. And it's humiliating. But it was also something where I was like, well, I guess that's just what they do. You know, I wasn't even, like, aware of my own power at that point, because I was so, like, freaked out that these guys were, you know, treating me and other women like that. And but then moving forward to today, you know, I look at it from such a different vantage point, and again, I sort of feel sorry for them. I just feel like they just are so angry and they're so caught up, you know, without having a way to vent or feel like they can vent, you know,
yeah.
without being seen as vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
Men do not like to be seen as vulnerable. I mean, we all don't like to be seen as vulnerable.
Right, right.
But vulnerability is such a crucial aspect of who we need to be in terms of stepping into who we really can be on the planet. Vulnerability is the way. It's like the place of innovation and courage, as Brené Brown said. And it's, you know, acknowledging that. What Al Franken, you know, is it good that he acknowledged that he was like that? Yeah. You know, we all need to come to terms with that,
mm-hmm.
you know, to rebalance the power.
Yeah.
You know, men, I think women are, a lot of women just want to, are so angry that this has been going on for so long that, you know, they have the itchy finger trigger syndrome thing, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, rightfully so. And, you know, but also at the same time, you know, it's going to, we're exploding, we're pressing the detonation button, right? But what's the aftermath going to look like? And, you know, does it serve us that Al Franken leaves? Does he resign? I don't know. I mean, I kind of wish that he wouldn't. But, you know, it's like, how do we make sense of all this?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think that
just be really honest and open with each other.
Yeah, I have no clue as to how this is going to wash out either. One of the things that I have been so frustrated over the years, not necessarily that I was a supporter of Clinton's, Bill Clinton's or not, but the thing that frustrated me more than anything else about the whole impeachment process that he went through was the fact that he was being impeached for lying about sex with an intern in the White House. Had nothing to do with the job that he was doing. And yet, if that was so grievous, why didn't they remove him from office? I just thought, you're going through this process. You're wasting your time and our money, our tax dollars, to do this, whether it's partisan or otherwise. The guy perjured himself. If he had just said yes, then it would have been over. And I've just been so frustrated over that whole thing. It's like, my God, and it's no wonder why other countries laugh at us for our prudishness over this subject of sexuality.
Mm.
You know, we just can't seem to get over that. And then it comes up again here 20 years later. And nothing is done. It's like, wait a minute, hold on. You're telling me that the allegations have been made against this congressman and that senator and this person and that person, they're gone. But the guy in the White House has had the same allegations and he's still there? Politics aside, I'm serious about this. Politics aside, something isn't right there. Either he goes or the other people come back to their positions. Because you can't have a double standard. That's part of my problem with the whole thing, is the double standard. And again, who gets to draw the line and where do you draw it?
And, well, exactly.
And what are the consequences? And if you do draw a line, what happens to everybody that's crossed that line? Do they all? I mean, my God. How many of the CEOs and managers and so forth do we know that we've come across over our own careers, Melissa, you and I, who'd be gone because maybe they just said something flippantly in conversation and that's enough. I mean, my goodness, it's like you said before, it's good that this is coming out. But what is it that we're going to have at the end of all of this? You know, what kind of a society are we going to have? I actually predict that we're going to have a whole lot more both wounded men and women. But hopefully it'll spur all of us to start thinking a little bit more about that level of respect as well as appreciation for the other. And, And we can finally move. Maybe we can start to move forward a little bit anyway. But how does divine wisdom help us through something like this?
Well, you mean divine feminism?
Divine feminine wisdom. Thank you.
No problem. I think it's about it's about leaving fear and embracing love, really, and being able to, have that aspect of ourselves, our shadow side, come up. And I think it's more of a purging, a kind of a cleansing that we're going through right now, and an acknowledgement that the shadow side deeply exists in our culture and in terms of misogyny and just an imbalance in terms of, I think we're really rebalancing ourselves and in terms of respecting the woman, respecting the feminine, respecting her energies, respecting the goddess, and it also is a calling again to men, to find that king energy inside of each one of men that exists.
Yeah.
That it's not about taking advantage of a woman; it's about embracing her and accepting her and cherishing her.
Exactly.
Because
quite honestly, as you and I probably both would acknowledge that it is through that combined energy that anything is created.
Yes, absolutely. You cannot have one without the other. I mean, divine feminine is about men and women.
Yeah, exactly. Fascinating. I'm really intrigued by this conversation that we're having. And I think that it's important, this latter part of our program here, because again, it is part of what's going on in our society here in the United States. I'm my wife and I happen to also watch Sky News, which comes out of the UK. They're having the same kinds of problems. Now, we don't hear it so much from European countries. Most of those speak other languages. Unless you get the channel, you can understand the language. They're probably going through it, too. They're probably experiencing the same upheaval. So it's not just isolated to the United States. This is This is an issue that we all have to deal with. Matter of fact, we're watching this one program. It's a sort of a comedy. It's called The Ranch with Ashton Kutcher and, I'm forgetting the gentleman's name. Western actor, big mustache, and I can't think of his name off the top of my head. But anyway.
Sam Elliott.
Thank you. That's the man. And the dialogue, he is a man's man, okay? And he's always putting his boys down because of things that they do that are so, to him, feminine. For example, one particular example was where he took one of his younger son's containers or cartons of almond milk out to the gate of the ranch and shot them. Because he didn't think that real men drank almond milk. They drank cow's milk if they're going to drink any milk at all.
Okay.
That kind of thing. He's that kind of macho kind of guy. But he has those moments. He will have those moments of vulnerability. And I'm glad that they're incorporating that in there. But his rough and tumble side is always a man's man. And he eats nothing but steak. He's just suffered a heart attack. You know, gee, I wonder why. But that's the kind of guy he is in the character. But that's the kind of there are a lot of guys that are out there that are like that.
I love it.
You know, so it's very, very interesting to see that that play out where they're giving him both sides of who he is. And he doesn't always feel comfortable when he's being vulnerable, especially with the women in his life. But. You know, it's nice to see that.
Absolutely. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
That exemplifies exactly what I'm talking about.
It's on Netflix. The Ranch is what it's called. And I like it because it has a lot of the character actors from programs that I've also watched over the years. And I absolutely love watching Sam Elliott. There's another movie that he did, I think, didn't get great reviews from what I understand, but my wife and I really enjoyed it. I think it was called The Hero. And he plays a voiceover guy who ends up getting diagnosed with cancer. And fascinating dynamic all the way around. And you know, folks, if that's just my recommendation, you know, what do I know? Melissa, I thank you so much for joining us here on the program and for sharing your thoughts. It's been wonderful. Again, the book is entitled Be Your Cause, and we encourage folks to pick it up. What website would you ask the folks to use to get more information, to find out more about you, to get in touch with you? Maybe they might be able to access you as far as, you becoming their mentor.
Well, people can reach me at my website, which is called redhotnow.com.
All right. I have to ask, why Red Hot Now?
Right. Yeah. Because it's about manifesting success your way on your terms and what that means to you and really coming into your own, coming into your own power, stepping into your own power and creating that passion project that you've always been so determined to do, but for one reason or another never have. Or creating that business you've always wanted to have, or whatever it is you've always wanted to have and wanted to do.
Yeah,
I will help you get there.
Terrific. Well, I may be getting in touch with you down the road here as well for other things. I've got some big dreams I've shared on this program before, and I'll share those with you, and we'll see what we can do. I would also like to extend an invitation to you that if you should find yourself in the Santa Barbara area, we would love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
Oh, I would love that. That's a good reason just in itself to get out there.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Richard. Blessings to you and everybody in Santa Barbara and everyone, especially during this time of the fires and everything.
Exactly. And before we let you go, three final questions. And again, my thanks for giving us so much time. First question is, who is Melissa Charity Waldron?
Someone who's really enjoying her journey of self-exploration and what that means and what what the potential is in her lifetime.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
Is to help other people see the potential in themselves. I see the potential in so many people, and they don't recognize it. We all need to extend that to each other. It's not just me. That's not just me doing my work. It's we all need to extend that courtesy to each other and acknowledge the beauty and the potential in each other.
And what is your life's purpose?
Well, I think it's this journey. I think it's really going from no to yes, going from fear to love, leaving fear and doubt behind, what is possible, believing in yourself, having faith in yourself. Those are all things that I'm on that journey myself. And if you'd like to follow me and join in, please find me on Facebook, because we all need to be doing this for ourselves.
Or you can also go to redhotnow.com and get more information. We also encourage you to pick up a copy of the book, Your Cause. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.